Greetings and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences on related topics, including what people should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests who are both experiencers and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. Infinite love is the only truth. Everything else is illusion. This is what many of us who've been through near-death and similar experiences have come to know is real. It is also the title of a profound and deeply thought-provoking book by a dedicated researcher, author, and speaker. We are so honored to welcome to Toward the Light, Mr. David Icke. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Juliet.
It's wonderful to have you with us, and thank you so much for taking a break from your book project to speak with us this evening. It is really lovely to have you.
Yeah, I've just emerged from my bunker of, 3.5, 4 months now. I've just put another book together, and it's been a really intense process, so it's nice to look out and see the sky still there, really. it's a nice time for me.
It is for me too, and for all of us. It's really, really wonderful to have you. And I want to say that reading this book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion, I can't iterate that enough because it is so real, it is so true. And what I would like to do first, Vlad, is ask you to share with us the experience that led you to the writing of this profound book.
Oh, goodness me. You know, how many days have we got, really? It's been a long process of the process that everyone goes through, who starts to ask questions and starts to walk a path in search of understanding the nature of life and reality. And that path is one of not learning, no, it's of unlearning. It is of removing the concrete, dense energy fields that we become encased in, which are based on fear, on low vibrational emotion, and all these things are trappers and entrappers in this reality. Because when we look through our eyes, we're seeing a frequency range. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. It's a place of experience and whatever you want to do with it. But what happens is, not least because of the manipulation I've been exposing for goodness knows how many years now, we become trapped in the five senses. And the five senses are, and the what I call the body computer, is like a filter. It's like a radio which is tuned to a certain place on the dial. And that's okay because it helps us experience this place on the dial we call the physical world. But what's happened is we've been, not least through the way that we are told life is and who we are from cradle to grave through education and religion and all the rest of it, we've become trapped. It's like the radio dial has got stuck. So that's the only one on the infinite number of stations available that we are accessing and are aware of. And it's interesting when you talk about near-death experiences. Funny enough, I've been listening to a number of interviews in the last week from people who've had that experience, and I've written quite a bit about that in the new book, because it's very important to understand this world, to understand how little of infinite possibility we're actually experiencing here. And near-death experiences have a very significant contribution to make, because they can describe what exists beyond this stuck place on the dial. Because we're supposed to be multidimensional, infinite consciousness and awareness of itself, but we've become stuck in awareness of only this physical realm. And what near-death experiences talk about is one great common theme is that suddenly when you leave this physical body, not that it's really physical, start to experience past, present, future, all these different apparently sequential experiences and sequential linear time. You experience them all in one moment. They also talk about the fact that your ability to comprehend and process information is fantastically expanded once you leave the physical body. Now, I've never had a near-death experience, but absolutely what I say in my books is that we've become trapped in this one point on the dial, and we believe that that is who we are. So when we look in the mirror, we look at the reflection, and we think that is us, or at least that is only us. When people say to you, "Who are you?" you say, "Well, I'm Fred Jones, and I'm from London, and I've got a wife and two kids, and I'd like to go and see my brother in Canada." You know, no, that's not who you are.
Yeah.
That's what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
It's not who you are. And when we operate from the point of view that we are little me, in effect, then we live little me lives when what we actually are infinite possibility, infinite consciousness, infinite genius. And if you want to manipulate and control people, then whatever you do, don't let them know they are infinite possibility, infinite genius, and infinite consciousness. You tell them that they are powerless, that they are little people, and that you have to make the decisions because they can't. And that's the process that we've been going through for so long, but it's breaking. The wake-up time has come.
Well, it's interesting how so many of us have been brought back, to sort of break their laws, as it were, and say, no, wait a moment. We are infinite. We are divine. We are eternal. And what a concept to grasp, that I can say this from experience. It's not something I've just theorized or read about. It's something I've been through a number of times. And I know that you've been through it too, even though you haven't had an NDE. You have had what we commonly refer to as spiritually transformative experiences. It translates to the same thing. And the good news is that someone does not have to die, have their bodies die, rather, to have these profound experiences
the interesting thing is you find the same thing all over the world. I've had my experiences, near-death experiences, I've had theirs. And I've got a great friend in South Africa called Credo Mutwa, who is a very famous shaman, or Sanusi, as they call them there in South Africa. And what mainstream science, and that's one of the big problems, mainstream science has been hijacked, not least it's been hijacked by the left brain. You see, one of the things that sets up the manipulation in this particular reality is what we call education, because to progress in education, you have to take in what the system is telling you. I mean, there's no better example of this than doctors. But you take in what the system tells you. And then when you're sitting in a room full of desks in silence with a man at the front, he says, "Pick up your pens, you have 2 hours to complete this paper," and you then have to tell the system what it has told you is real so that you can pass your exams and progress within it. And the whole system is based on left brain reality. For people who haven't come across this, the left side of the brain is about language, it's about this world, it's about what passes for logic. The right brain is creative, it's out there, it's the different spin on life. And what the system all over the world has done is set up a system whereby you educate the left brain and you do not stimulate the right brain. This is why, one of the reasons why things like art and music are really a low-level importance within the education system compared with all the left-brain things like words and language and equations and all this stuff. And what they're doing in this country at the moment now is they're talking about introducing that kind of education to toddlers. And in the early years, play is so vital, because play ad libs, play imagines, and that stimulates and opens the right brain. If you start putting this left brain education into toddlers, then you're going to close down their creativity and their out there connections much faster. And why I'm saying this is because when you look at the professions that tell us what reality is, not least science, education, all this stuff, academia, what are those people? What do they have to do to reach those levels of letters after their names so that they can go into the positions that the public see as intelligent and educated, and, well, they must know he's a scientist. You have to be brilliant at taking in left brain information and then turning it out onto exam papers. And what I'm saying is the system is controlled, and we are told what reality is by left brain prisoners, people who are locked in the left brain. This is why they can't literally get their minds around these other concepts. So what they'll do is someone like Credo Mutwa, they will say he's just a mumbo-jumbo witch doctor. And in fact, he's a carrier of ancient knowledge, which is at the absolute cutting edge of what we would call science. And one of the things that he does, and he's done it for me a couple of times, is he throws the bones, which is their version of the tarot cards or the rune stones. And he's only done the second one relatively recently, but the first one he did, which has had time to permeate, was brilliantly accurate. And what he does, he's got these bones which are carved into different symbols, and these symbols represent different concepts, different aspects, different parts of life and different parts of you. And what you do is you put your hands over them, and to put your energy in, because it's all about magnetic energy. And they lock into your energy field, because it's literally like magnetism. They're like magnets, and they lock into that part of your energy field which they magnetically connect to. I call it vibrational magnetism. And then he throws the bones, and where they land in relationship to each other, he is able to read. Not just from experience, because I said to him, how do you manage to read this them? And of course, part of it is experience in the way they relate to each other as they fall. But he said the other part of it is the main part. He said when I throw the bones, he said I go into the silent cave, as he calls it. I go into the silent place where past, present, and future are all one, and everything comes together. And when I go into that place, the bones speak to me and tell me what I need to know. Now, you talk to a left brain prisoner called Professor Ujima Flip, MGB, FRS, whatever, and he'll say, that's ridiculous, that's impossible. It is when you're a left brain prisoner, because you can't get beyond the physical. You can't get beyond the physical, the five sense level of reality. But what actually is the case is it's not just that we are multidimensional. It's that those bones are multidimensional. Yeah. Because they are just, what we see as bones, they are just a, quote, physical reflection of energy. And energy is consciousness. Everything is conscious. Some things may be more conscious than others. I mean, we can see that with George Bush, but everything is conscious, and therefore, if you go to that point where all is one, then you can communicate with animals. You can communicate with anything, because of course, we don't use language to communicate. It is knowing. People might call it telepathy, but it's much greater than telepathy. It's something beyond telepathy. Telepathy hardly describes the experience. It's just knowing, instant knowing. And Croda Mutwa's wife, Virginia, she runs a clinic where she uses herbs and plants, medicines, which she grows in her own garden. And when I was there last time, she talks to the plants. And how does she talk to the plants? You know, the plants don't speak English or South African or whatever. No, because the words are just a physical reflection of thought. And it's the thought that the plants read, because they are conscious, and they are able to communicate at that level. One of the things she does is she will introduce the patient to the plant and talk to the plant about what she's trying to do with the patient. And then afterwards, and she only takes enough of the plant to create the medicine for the individual involved. She doesn't take enough to kill the plant. And afterwards, she'll put a little bit of money next to the plant. And, you get people who are left brain stuck, and they'll say, you know, what do you mean give money to the plant? What's he going to do? Buy a beer? You know, but it's not, the money is symbolic. It's the energy. Yeah. The energy of gratitude is carried in that money as it is placed next to the plant. What does the plant do? It absorbs the energy of gratitude. And one of the things that I'm doing, it, I think next weekend actually, is I'm going to spend a couple of days. I don't know if you've come across this man, Juliet, and does some incredible work. He's a Japanese scientist called Dr. Emoto.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah? Yes, indeed.
Well, it's great because he read that book that you mentioned, Infinite Love, and then said he'd like to meet me. And now we're gonna talk for a couple of days. And for people that don't know about Dr. Emoto, he developed a way, it's just astonishing what he's done, of showing how words and how things like mobile phones and other vibrational influences actually affect energy, affect us. And when you see his pictures, what he does is he puts words and other vibrational influences onto water and then freezes it into crystals so you can photograph them. And when you see a crystal that has been exposed to kind words, then it's perfect. It's a beautiful thing to the eye. It's symmetrical. It's balanced. It's beautiful. And then you look at a crystal from water that has been exposed to unpleasant words and mobile phone frequencies and other things like that, and it's just an absolute mess. And it's so obvious. When you look beyond the mainstream media and that circling of the wagons around the official version of reality, the information and the supporting evidence is all there from endless sources that everything is one consciousness, and we are not an expression of that consciousness. We are that consciousness. We're not just the droplet in the ocean. We are the ocean. And what's happened in this reality, not least through the manipulation, is we've forgotten that. And in forgetting it, we live on a fraction of the potential that we have, and it's not by accident.
Well, you know, it's interesting that you're talking about what they're wanting to do with so-called education with toddlers, because as toddlers and young children, we're still remembering who we are. We're remembering past lives. We're very intuitive and telepathic and all of that. And you know, this is scary to think that they want to start straight away to rob the children of this. And, of course, I didn't do well in school because I've always been predominantly right-brained. I'm an artist. I'm a musician. I'm a writer. And, you know, I always thought, oh, I'm slow. I'm not very bright, am I? And then when I got out of this school and just started being myself and being creative, I discovered that I was indeed very intelligent. But not with the letters after my name.
And under the version of intelligent that people have. I mean, I was the same. I mean, when I went into a new class, I always headed for a seat near the window,
yeah,
so that I could daydream. And it's, you know, daydreaming is absolutely vital, because daydreaming disconnects you from the physical level of reality, and you can start to wander into other realms, and you can get great inspiration that way. I mean, I don't meditate formally, and you know, all that stuff. Although, you know, good luck to those who do. I do a lot of daydreaming, and that's to let my mind wander. And what do teachers say? I mean, what do they say in class? Stop daydreaming and get on with your work. You know, because everything's upside down, and the education system's upside down. And it's for a reason. And you know, I always try to stress to people that there are two aspects to all this. There is the knowledge that is missing from mainstream society, which people like near death experiences can bring back and explain, and you know, and it's fantastic that they do. But I think too often people concentrate on the information and being spiritual as they perceive it, and they forget that there's another aspect of this, that the reason that everyone doesn't know this, the reason everyone is not aware of it, the reason people's right brains are shut down, is because there is a cold, calculated agenda to do that, so that the few can control the many. And this is why my books always operate on two levels. One is, hey, this is what they're not telling you. This is what you're not being told. What do you think about it? But on the other level, hey, this is why you're not being told. And if we address this and we put an end to this, then the free flow of information will be available to everyone. And education will not be about indoctrination. It won't be a sausage machine. It will be looking at bringing out the uniqueness of every individual, because although we are all one, we are unique aspects of that one. And so often, not least manipulators, they try to sell us this idea of oneness, this idea of everything being one. And to them, it's not the fact that we're all one infinite consciousness, we are all each other. It's oneness equals ability to centrally control everything. Oh yeah, let's have one world, i.e. one government dictating to everybody. And it's important, you know, when we're dealing with this information, I think anyway, that we don't just talk about the information, which is very, very important, but we also look at why the information is not widely available. Because once we bring that that dam down, that wall down that's holding it back, then the world changes immediately, because this information is not on the fringes anymore. It's actually into the mainstream. And I know, and you know, you must do, that when people get access to this information and other versions of reality, it makes sense to vast majority of people, for a simple reason: they already know it.
Yes.
They already know it. It's not that we have to suddenly learn all this stuff. We have to remove these dense energy fields I was talking about earlier, of low vibrational emotion and rigid thought and rigid belief. That's the killer. Rigid belief is the filter that filters out the infinite. And only allows in that which supports the belief. We need to let go of belief, stop believing, and start knowing. And only we can do that.
And it's also about remembering who we really are. Remembering is, you know, what I've come to realize, and through having these experiences, and I've had a number of them, and I have to say I'm, when I look back now, I'm very grateful that I was so very ill as a child, and I was actually out of school more than I was in it, because I was just too ill. And I see what a precious gift that was, because I couldn't be so easily programmed into the lies. I've always had the audacity to think for myself, to question all the answers, and to say, wait a second, this isn't lining up to the experiences that I've had on the other side, and through being in a trance state and what have you. And it really is important to honor the experiences, and certainly I've been knocked around as a result of this, but it keeps coming back and won't leave me alone, just like what you have been through won't leave you alone. It propels you forward. It makes you share this truth and this love, because it is so important. And the light is here and is going to triumph over all of this darkness. One thing I would like to ask you is, and this is really important that people can understand so that we can overcome it, is the origins of fear. Because when I had my NDEs, I was able to see that fear is an acquired state, not a natural one. So what can you share with us about that?
Well, I think many things I like to talk about on that. First of all, it's the four-letter word that controls the world.
Yes.
All the manipulation of the mass of humanity is based on fear. Because once people are in fear of something, they look outside of themselves for someone to protect them from what they have been manipulated to fear. And therefore, if you can get someone frightened and get them to see you as the protector, then you're now completely in control of them. And this is what the war on terrorism and 9/11 was all about. It was to do with creating mass fear and putting in more and more controls and destructions of basic freedoms, using the excuse that we need to protect you from these terrorists, without telling us that actually they've actually done it. But so fear is absolutely the basis of it all. The way I see things, the way I'm seeing things more and more, and funnily enough, I have to smile because I'm now picking up science magazines, and I'm seeing scientists with letters after the name saying, we might have to consider the concept that the body's a computer, and that's exactly what it is. It's a highly advanced biological computer. And what I mean by that, it has the ability not just to react to input data and stuff like that, and people saying, okay, this is what you do with the data. It can actually, to a large extent, work things out for itself and react to information without external input. And what's happened is that we have become confused, not least because we've been encouraged to do so. We've become confused between who we are and what we are experiencing this reality through. And it's like a spaceman on the moon who becomes confused and thinks he's his spacesuit. Now, if you imagine you're on the moon and you've got the idea that you're your spacesuit. I mean, your fellow spaceman's going to be straight on the blower, isn't he? Straight on the phone. Hey, Houston, we've got a problem. Bill thinks he's his spacesuit. It's chaos up here. Now, of course, because we have been manipulated to believe that we are our spacesuit, we are our body, there's chaos here. the whole heart of the problem. And computers have programs, and they download new programs, and the programs affect the way the computer reacts. And when we inherit, if you like, the body computer from the genetic line, we are inheriting a hard drive. And those hard drives can affect us because they carry behavior traits, they carry traits of abilities, they carry traits of things we'd rather not have in terms of, quote, personality. And what happens is the consciousness, which is experiencing through the computer, can become confused and think it's the computer. And the computer reality in most people dominates. This is why you've got psychologists who say that they can break down human personalities into certain archetypes, and ridiculously few archetypes, and they say that every human personality they can break down into a few archetypes and combinations of them. Now, you cannot do that with infinite possibility, infinite consciousness, but you can do it with computer programs. And so we have got confused by identifying ourselves with the computer rather than who we are. And we're now more and more seeing the evidence emerging to confirm this. Like I say, even some scientists are now starting to say, is the body actually a computer? Yes, it is. And what we call procreation is that two hard drives being combined into one, which is what we call the child. And what we call being human is the computer software. That's what being human is. We are not human. We are infinite consciousness, all possibility. Everything ever has, is, and ever will be, because there is no time and there is no space. There is only now. And so the idea of being human, that is a software program. You know, when people have near-death experiences, they don't experience them as in the same sense that they perceive themselves to be human. It's, like I say, a software program. And you can see this more and more. I really saw that story, I think it was about a year ago now, where there was a gentleman called William Sheridan in New York. And he had a heart transplant, and he was waiting in the hospital for the heart transplant. And while he was waiting in bed, he joined the hospital art therapy class. And he said, he was about as good at art as me, right? You know, my creativity is words, but my creativity is not art. I mean, you know, I'm a pathetic artist. And so was he, I have to say. And he has the heart transplant. And then afterwards, as he's recovering, he goes back to the art therapy class. And now he's producing intricate pictures, far more intricate than ever he produced before. And no one could understand why, least of all him. The art therapy teacher couldn't, or whatever. And what happened was most people don't ever meet the donor's family. But because he was doing work promoting the people to give their organs for transplantation, he actually met the mother of the donor of his heart. And he asked her the obvious question, did your son like art? It turns out that it was his great love and had been since he was a kid, like 18 months old. And when I started following this up, I found goodness knows how many instances of exactly the same thing in so many other people. There was the lady who was frightened of heights. She had the lungs of a mountain climber and started climbing mountains. There was the person who had a transplanted organ from someone who was a great fan of is it Sade? Every time he heard a record from that singer, he started to cry. He had no idea until later it came to light. And there are endless other examples of this, which I've kind of documented a number of them in the new book. Now, what is happening here? Because this, you know, there are certain doctors who've actually compiled these character changes and ability changes that have happened after transplantation. What has happened is very simple. When you transplant an organ into another computer, you are transplanting the information that that organ holds because the cells, and another thing I go into in the new book, the cells are computer chips.
Yes.
And they hold information. So when the transplantation happens, that receiving computer, if you like, downloads that information and has access to that which it holds, which are character traits, and they are abilities. Because as William Sheridan said, I didn't only start to immediately, spontaneously produce these artistic pictures, I also took on traits of the character of the donor, he later realized. And this is a common thing. And this is another very important aspect of what we're talking about here in terms of who we are. Because we look at our character, our personality, and we say, my thought processes and my emotional reactions, that is me. What is it? is it? Or is it the computer, hard drive, playing out? Because we had a lady over here, for instance, about 2 years ago, I guess it was, and 40 years ago, she had gone into a spontaneous, deep, deep depression, clinical depression. She was in and out of institutions for 40 years. And then eventually someone said to her, can you think of anything that happened around the time that this started that could have caused it? Okay, anything. And she said, well, the only thing I did around that time, she said, I had a lot of tooth fillings. With what? Mercury. What's that? It's a poison. And, yeah, I know, mercury is a terrible poison, you know. Ah, I've got a great idea. Let's use it to fill people's teeth with, you know. I mean, you know, is this world crazy or what? Anyway, what she did then was she had the mercury fillings taken out. There was a lot of them. Went on a mercury detox. And the clinical depression of 40 years disappeared. And because of the mercury. Now, if we are our emotions, how come mercury can make our emotions so manifest that we are in clinical depression for 40 years? Then now, at last, hallelujah, you know, intelligent life calling planet Earth, starting to accept that all this rubbish they put into food and drink, particularly for young people, these additives and stuff, is actually affecting the behavior of children. I mean, goodness me, you know, I mean, it's like, what? You just realize that? And why is that? If the children's personality is and emotions and reactions is them, how come some stuff in food and soft drink can change their personality? Because so much, Juliet, that what we perceive to be us, what we perceive to be our personality, is the computer program playing out. And it's our emotions, like our thoughts, are electrochemical processes. And for me, even thought is a computer-level reality. There's a level beyond that, and that is knowing. And let's come back again to near-death experiences. How many people who've had that experience have said how they just knew everything. They just knew so much instantly without thinking. They just knew it. It was there. It's like that man I quoted earlier said, there was no past, there's no present, there's no future. There was no sequence, there was no time. I knew what people thought about me in what we call the past. I knew what they were thinking about me now. I knew what they would think about me. And it was all happening in one moment. That's who we are.
That's what I also express in my near-death experiences. People can read about it on my website, towardthelight.org. I mentioned this in my near-death experience account. And also, I wrote an article called The Dying Process from an Experiencer's Perspective, and I address the fact that past, present, and future are all happening simultaneously, all in the now, because there is no time or space, just like you said.
Yeah.
But also what I experienced is being emotionally detached. I was just able to be in the love and not be charged about anything or attached to anything or worried. There was no fear. I experienced absolutely no fear when I was on the other side. And what a space to behold. And the love was real. That's why when I see the title of your book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, I can say from experience, yes, that is real. Because I felt it. I experienced it.
Oh, and so many people have in their different ways. And again, you know, for me anyway, we can't talk about the nature of the knowledge of who we are and the nature of knowledge of reality without talking about why we don't know that.
Yes,
there is a force that has systematically isolated us into this five-sense reality, which is a tiny, tiny frequency range band of experience. And they have put guards at the door, if you like,
yes,
to stop us experiencing who we really are while in this reality. And fear is a software program within the body computer. It's been put in there. It's naturally there. And these human emotions, we talk about them, these human emotions, this human nature that we tell you can't get across, human nature, that will never change, mate. What is the nature of a human? It is the computer level of reality. And if we can, while in this, I almost said place there, but there isn't one, of course, but while we're in this reality, if we can come from that higher understanding of who we are and start expressing that, then this reality changes because we rewrite the program, literally. Mm. You know, every time we have a experience, particularly a powerfully emotional experience, that is downloaded into the computer and is passed on to the next generation. And if it is based on fear, and there's been so much fear in this world, then people have an aptitude to fear. But we don't have to, because you know, you can download things into your desktop computer, and they sit there as files, and they won't affect the computer unless you open the file. Then you open the file, then it's on the screen, then suddenly, bingo, it's affecting the computer. We don't have to open those files that are lying there of fear and all these things. We can override them. We are infinite consciousness. We are all possibility. This is a computer. Once we realize that we're not the body, we are that which animates the body. We are the all-powerful, all-possibility, infinite consciousness, and not little me, then we can start taking control of the keyboard and the mouse and start changing this experience that we're having into one that we want. It's powerlessness that is sold to us from cradle to grave, because if we buy into that, then that's what we experience. Of course we do. And we are constantly filtering information based on belief. I mean, this is very blatantly clear from endless psychological research that what we believe is filtering and editing information to fit the belief. And so, it's like I've said in the books many times, the manipulators don't care what rigid belief you have. They don't care if you have a rigid Christian belief, a rigid Muslim belief, a rigid Jewish belief, a rigid atheist belief, a rigid belief in this, a rigid belief in that, a rigid Republican belief. I don't care. As long as you've got a rigid belief, they got you. For me, if we just start opening our minds, opening our hearts, yes, opening our minds, and allowing all possibility to enter. Allow it in. Not that we believe everything, but that we do not dismiss it by reflex action just because it's different to the norm we've understood so far. See, people say it's good to be skeptical. It's not. It's not. It's good to question, and it's good to filter your own information and decide how you want to perceive it. But skepticism, and you know, they have these things like skeptic societies. They do make me laugh.
Yes, me too.
They make me laugh. They're hilarious. They're hilarious. And they're full of fear. What a skeptic does is not to question something that's different. He sets out to destroy it because the skeptic has decided what is and what cannot be. And therefore, anything that is from the realm of what they believe cannot be, they have to attack it and destroy it. And I did a television program about a month ago with a skeptic from the Skeptic Society in Britain. And it was an eye-opening experience and was very, very funny. First of all, he told me there was no evidence in my books to support what I was saying, and I said, which one have you read? And he said, I've read any of them. So there we started from a good point of research here. But the point was that to watch this man, and I've met other skeptics over the years, and they're looking for a getaway car, an escape route to hold on to their rigid belief. And what they're looking for is, whatever you say, they have to find another reason why it could be, right, which relates to their belief. As long as they can do that, then they're happy. They don't then go and research whether what you're saying has more merit than their, well, it could also be this. They don't do that. As long as there is a, it could have been this, it could be this, then they're happy because their belief system in their own, in their mind, is safe and secure for another day. And it's fascinating to watch how people have belief as a sense of security. It's like, take one example. You have a Christian, and they have that as their sense of security. Because the way the reality is manipulated, this five-sense reality is manipulated, it is not just to create fear, although this is an aspect of it, it's also to create insecurity. Because insecure people look outside of themselves for a sense of security. This is why so many insecure people are in the entertainment professions and in public professions, because they are desperate for external confirmation that they're okay people, and they're successful, and they're all right, because they can't find it within themselves. There's so many insecure people in the entertainment and public professions because of that. And so people are looking for external ways to make them feel secure. And one of those external ways is what we call religion. They have a rigid belief, yeah, it's okay, because I'm a Christian, I'm going to be all right because of this, and I'm going to be with Jesus, and I'm going to be all right after death and all this stuff, because fear of death is the biggest fear of all. Fear of the unknown, that's what it is. And they cling to belief as a sense of security. Whereas when you start to open up from the concrete eggshell, as I call it, this low vibrational energy that we put around ourselves, rigid belief, low vibrational emotion, fear, you start then to be at peace with the flow of events. You start to be at peace with things flowing. I've known so many people when I was growing up who were desperate to make sure that things never changed, that next Tuesday was the same as this Tuesday, because that was their security, because of their insecurity. And it's a great change when you start to be at peace with the flow of change and the flow of events. You start to be at peace with not knowing what the next minute will bring, rather than desperately trying to control what the next minute will bring, because you so fear what it will be. And that is entering the realm, when you start to flow, that's entering the realm of all possibility. Because all possibility is just that. It's not one possibility, it's any possibility. And therefore, you cannot predict it. You cannot turn it into a rigid series of this Tuesdays, like next Tuesday, like next Wednesday, and we always have fish on Friday and all this stuff. It's a state of flux and flow. And so many people are, and I understand it in the world we live in, my goodness, I do. So many people are insecure. They don't feel comfortable in that state of flux. They want everything to be predictable and callable, because that makes them feel more secure.
Mr. Ike, this is Don here. I was just wondering, it's hard to hear Juliet, of course. If you could speak up significantly, I don't know if you'll be able to with the system you have, Juliet, but we do have callers that have been ringing in nonstop. We've maxed out a lot of our lines, so people, all lines are open, all streams are open. We can handle the number of connections, just keep coming in. But are we taking questions? I wanted to break in and ask that, because...
Well, we could keep on as we are, I think.
Yes,
excellent.
Yes, because there's something
you got it. Okay, well, I know what to tell the audience when they call in. Thank you, and wonderful, wonderful interview. And thank you very much. We'll let you keep going.
Thank you, Don. David, you did something so brilliant in your book, and something that I certainly understand and relate to, also being that I'm a musician, and you beautifully pointed out, and I share this with people all the time, that fear is a low and completely different vibrational frequency than love is. Love has got high, short wavelengths, and fear has got low and long wavelengths. And so when people say you can't mix love and fear, it's true because they're completely different frequencies. Would you like to elaborate on that a bit?
Well, I had an experience in a rainforest in Brazil in 2003 when I took something called ayahuasca. It's a psychoactive drug. I only I took it twice, and I've never taken any other. Oh, yeah, on one brief occasion, because I got from it what I wanted, and that was enough. And I went into an incredible, incredible space. It took the form of a female voice. Spoke to me for 5 hours about the nature of reality, and it was hilarious. I mean, you know, beyond this realm, that's an unbelievable sense of humor. One of the things it talked about, and I experienced in that state, was when you go into these higher realms of consciousness, into this, see, everything is the same consciousness, but it's about level of awareness. It's when you reach that level of consciousness, when you are aware that you are all, you go into a place not of vibration, but of stillness and of peace. Why stillness? Because to vibrate, something needs 2 points between which to oscillate. That, so if you're in a realm of duality and polarity, then you have vibration because you have oscillation between 2 points. When you go into the realm of oneness, in awareness of itself, you have stillness because there is no polarity, because everything is literally one. The silent cave that Kreda Mutwa talked about, the place that so many near-death experiences talk about, the place I went to in Brazil, people who go into states of meditation and they say, I go into a realm of stillness. So this vibrational realm is not how the whole of infinity is, but the point is taken that there are different vibrational states, and it may well be that you vibrate quicker and quicker and quicker until you reach a point where you don't vibrate at all, and then you're in this state of stillness. Certainly it is clear that the more you come into dense vibration, slow vibration, you are coming into a realm of where it is much more difficult to express the full magnitude of who you are, because it's like a treacle, concrete-like energetic state. And like I said earlier, it's rigid thought, rigid belief, fear. These are all states of vibration that are dense and slow, and create this. What do we say when we're in those states? We say, "Oh, I'm feeling really heavy today."
Yes.
We talk about someone who's not very bright, and we say they're really dense. You know, and it's because it's not because they're stupid; it's because they're in a state of density, and that's not the same thing. And when you start to open your mind and open your heart, and you start to become more and more of who you are, you start to connect with more and more of who you are, then you're getting closer and closer to this state of oneness. You might still be a long way from it, but you're also a long way from the density of fear and rigid thought. The more you open up, the quicker you start to vibrate. And the density is broken down. And as the density is broken down, you're able to connect with a greater level of yourself. And bingo, the whole process starts to unfold. And when people say to me, I hate giving people advice because it's not my place. I can only talk about what I've experienced and what I think. And the only person who knows what's right for each person is themselves. It's accessing that knowing that is the trick. But what I would say, just from my own experience, and I, again, observing others, is if people say, how do I break out of this density? I would say one of the most powerful energies and powerful ways and means of change is the energy called intent. If you put out the intent of what you want, because this is all possibility we're dealing with here. Anything's possible. Oh, that's not possible. Well, anything's possible, so it is, okay? It might not be possible for you, but it's possible. And if you put out the intent that you want to break out of this stranglehold on your infinity, you want to break out of these concrete patterns, and you want to be free of this manipulation, you don't want to be little me anymore, you want to be infinite I, then if you put out the intent that you want to do that, every single time, not when there's an R in the month, when the sun's out, every time you will attract to you what is necessary to do it, every time. What happens, however, is that we have this idea that when we want to be spiritual and we put out the intent, I want to be spiritual, or whatever name you want to put to it, I want to be free, I want to open, I want to be the true magnitude of who I am. We get this idea that what happens next is you start floating down country lanes and, you know, rabbits come and sit at your feet, Disney style, and butterflies drop on your shoulder and all that stuff. And nymphs are playing harps and all the rest of it. It doesn't work like that. No, it might work like that for some people, but it don't work like that for most people. What happens for most people is all hell breaks loose in your life. Why? And at that point, this is where it breaks down, because I think some people don't understand what's going on. And I appreciate that, because I didn't understand what was going on in my life. In my life, absolutely, cataclysmically, all hell broke loose in the early 90s. I don't know what was going on, but I understood it with more experience and hindsight. But what is going on is when you put out the intent of where you want to go, then you attract to you, like I said earlier, what is necessary to achieve that intent. Now, what is necessary? What is necessary is to break down the barriers that we throw up between our incarnate consciousness, if you like, the computer level of reality, and our infinite self. So what life draws to us, what we draw to ourselves with that intent, are the experiences necessary to break that down. And some of them can be very, very painful. You might be in a relationship, for instance, which is adding to your rigidity. So the first thing that starts to happen when that's breaking down is that relationship comes to an end. Now, you might not want it to, but this is the effect of the relationship. Therefore, you know, it's got to go, and that happens. Or you might be attached to a job because it makes you lots and lots of money, but it is adding to that rigidity. It's adding to that disconnection, and suddenly, after you put that intent out, something happens, you lose your job. Now, in the experiencing, it's a nightmare. Oh, my goodness, I lose my job. Oh, my goodness, my wife's leaving me. My husband's leaving me. Oh, my goodness. And we think, well, you know, whatever happened? I just want to be spiritual. What happened to the butterflies and the nymphs? And what's happening is we are attracting to us experiences to break down the barriers that allow us to be who we are. And it's having the commitment, the courage, whatever you want to call it, to go with it and let it happen. so that we can achieve what we want. But of course, and I understand it, so many people at that point go, if that's spirituality, you can stick it, mate. I'm going back to how things were. And it's interesting, you said earlier, Juliet, about how you became detached in a near-death state. It's not, I've not experienced it, but I can kind of feel it. It's not that you are cold, it's that you are just detached in the knowledge that it doesn't matter because we're all one. And we're being challenged to have that perspective while still in this reality, to not get attached to other people and other things, whether it's a job, whether it's a career, whether it's just possessions, to the point where they're not adding to our lives, they're controlling our lives. And have that, because I tell them my philosophy. I was talking to someone early tonight about this. I'm trying to do what I can to communicate this information so that people can see that there are other possibilities, not just that which the mainstream media and everyone's telling them. I move through life, and I pass through different people and different phases of my life, and it's part of me has to live in this world and interact with people in this reality, but another part of me knows that it doesn't matter. So it's a strange experience, because to part of you it matters, these daily individual kind of experiences and interactions we have, but on another level it doesn't matter, because you know that what people are getting caught in and what people are taking to be important and relevant, you know that the moment that they withdraw from this physical realm of what we call death, they'll see it was all an illusion and it didn't really matter.
Exactly.
And it's detaching. I think that's a good word. It's detaching to the point where, although people might say things about you that are not very pleasant because of what you do and how you do it, it's doing it anyway because you believe it to be right and the most effective way of doing what you want to do. And you do it in the knowledge that although they might react against you in a negative way now, it doesn't matter.
Thank you so much. One thing I wanted to share also is that whilst I was going through these periods of being detached, I also felt profound love and compassion. So I don't want people to be confused that the detachment translates into coldness or indifference. That's completely different.
Exactly. You know, when I was in this ayahuasca state, I mean, I don't think I've laughed so much in 5 hours in my life. I mean, it was just so hilarious because this female voice, which was just the way I decoded thought forms, was so funny in the way that this illusory reality was described. And I then came back and I started reading a lot of scientific research and all this stuff and near-death experience stuff and everything, and found that what this voice had talked to me about for 5 hours was correlated in so many other different ways. And it is, when I was in that state, I was not emotionally attached to anybody or anything, but at the same time, I was connected to everything.
Yeah.
See, because we're dealing with all possibility, we're dealing with constant apparent paradox, unless you realize you're dealing with all possibility. So you're everything and you're nothing.
And
you're here and you're there.
You
are and you're not. You're all possibility, and it's a state that is very difficult to understand when we're in this realm, because this realm is about one possibility or two possibilities or limited possibilities, a better way of putting it, instead of all possibility. And therefore, the perspective is totally and utterly different. And bridging that chasm of credibility when you're in a realm that is about limited possibility and someone's talking about a realm of all possibility, of course, we almost don't have the language to describe what we're talking about.
Oh, indeed. It's totally ineffable. That's what I've pointed out so many times in this, because, you know, the language is just limited to this third-dimensional realm, and it can't really carry us to a deeper understanding of the multidimensional dimensionality that we really are and that we really have. I would like to welcome Dr. Brooks Agnew and say hello and acknowledge you and thank you so much, lad, for sharing your program with us now. It's tremendous.
It's absolutely, it's my pleasure, Juliet, and I just am overwhelmed and overjoyed that David could come on your program. I know 1 hour is not enough to talk to this guest, so I'm very happy to give you this hour and delay my program for an hour. It's no problem. David.
Thanks so much. Much appreciated.
Oh, no, it's my pleasure. I did have a question. You two were breaching on the subject of consciousness and intention, and these are so powerful, just incredibly overwhelming subjects that are just permeating almost all the workshops out there today.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that language, at least English, doesn't do justice as far as expressing the concepts that come to people who awaken in this.
Right.
But I think, you know, music comes really close. And,
oh, yes.
And this expression of love that people have one for another is so powerful that it really transcends language. It becomes pure feeling.
Well, music, the way we interact with music, is a form of knowing. You can hear music. In fact, what we're doing, of course, is we're feeling music because it's
yes.
a vibrational expression. And never mind what the words say, and sometimes music might not have any words, but you sync with it and you communicate with it and you get inspiration from it because you are connecting to it vibrationally. And in the same way, you'll hear another piece of music and you'll say, turn that off, it's driving me mad, because you're not syncing vibrationally with it. Music is a wonderful form of communication, even if there's no words, and it's very, very important. And of course, the music industry in the world is controlled by about two or three corporations. You know, there's so much great music out there that never gets really big public, accolade or even public knowing about it, because the corporations control the market. And the music's just very, very important.
In fact, in my article, The Dying Process from an Experiencer's Perspective, again, you can find that on towarddelight.org. I am describing the dying process and what is needed and necessary for caring for a dying person or the dying person's body. And I stress the importance of switching off the television, for goodness sake, and implementing music, because music is so powerful and so healing and so communicative. And yet any hospital or hospice or home that I've been in, I walk into a patient's room and there is only a television. It's got me so gobsmacked, and I just say, this is the last thing that a dying person needs is a television. They need music. But music is liberating. It's empowering. So it's kind of curious that they seem to avoid music. Although, having said that, there's a lot more music therapy that is going on now, I'm pleased to say.
It's interesting, too, when you talk about this manipulation to holders in the five senses. If you look at the way society is structured, it's all about enticing the five senses. It's attracting us by sight, by hearing, by smell, by touch, by taste. It's all five sense based, and that's one level, and it's a nice experience, as you know, if it's in balance with the rest of us. But it's become a prison, and it's the way society is structured is all about the five senses. So I'm not surprised television's on everywhere. You know, I mean, someone's got a week to live. We've got to sell them something. Hey, we're running out of time, guys. What can we sell them? You know, it's just crazy.
Don't you think, though, that the right music at the right time can sort of synchronize the intention of beings so that they can reach this higher vibrational state together and thus, as a group, intend great change?
Yeah, I think, obviously, the more of oneness that can connect to a common goal, the more powerful that will be. It's very important that people do start coming together and we start uniting on what we agree on instead of allowing the fault lines, the manipulated fault lines of religion and belief to disconnect us, because that's the whole idea. It's not just about dividing and ruling people by dividing this nation against that nation or that faction against that faction. What they're actually doing is dividing us vibrationally. Because that's what everything is. And if we're divided vibrationally in among ourselves, then it weakens our ability to bring about change. And this is, for me, what would change the world overnight is if people started doing what they believed to be right rather than what they believed was right for them in the moment. That's the big thing. You know, it's like this mental gymnastics. Okay, this is what's right, but what's right for me? Oh, well, I'm going to go right for me. And coming back to the whole near-death experience, when you leave the body, your perspective of what was right and what wasn't right is completely transformed, because what you thought was the right for you, once you leave the body, you realize it wasn't right for you at all, and you wish you hadn't have done it. You must do the right thing while you're here. And the vibrational thing is something that I've observed a lot. And it seems to me that when you break everything down to vibration, a lot of things start to make sense, because everything is a vibrational construct. Something like politics, for instance, is a vibrational construct. And when you get people entering politics, some may have a good intent. They may have a genuine intent that they want to bring about genuine change that's going to make the world a nicer place to live in. But what then happens is the number of people I've spoken to about politicians over the years, and they said, you know, I knew that bloke before he went into politics. My goodness, he's not the bloke I knew. Why? Because it's the same. They call it sympathetic resonance, I think. It's the principle where you have you know, two or three violins that are, or guitars, whatever, are plucked to the same note. And then you introduce another violin or guitar that's not plucked to any note. And then that will start to vibrate to the dominant frequency, which is what the other violins are playing. And when we enter into vibrational constructs, be it an educational facility, a government, politics, whatever, we can, if we're not really true to ourselves and true to our values, therefore we keep vibrating to those values, then we can start oscillating to the dominant frequency, which is what that construct, vibrational construct, is vibrating to. So when you have someone who starts out genuinely wanting to do something positive and they go into politics, the longer they're in there, if they don't hold those values and they start doing what's right for me in the moment, I know what I'm going to tell this interviewer is not true, but it suits me to tell him a lie at the moment. And you get into that. What you're doing is you're being vibrated into line. And society itself vibrates people into line by insisting that if you want to avoid ridicule or condemnation, you have to conform to certain norms. Norms in belief, norms in this, norms in that. And it takes the strong vibrational energy that says, I'm not being vibrated into line, sorry. And then what happens is, again, coming to what you mentioned earlier about groups coming together, the more who do that, the more we're starting to vibrationally change the nature of the reality we're living in. And if the more people that start holding on to the values that they believe in, instead of being vibrated into line by the system's construct, the more that construct starts to come under pressure from another, a different vibration, from a different drum beat that people are now vibrating to, and we start to break that down. We start to break the density down. The more we break the density down, the more higher vibrational energy can come in, the more knowledge, understanding, wisdom, and inspiration comes from that, the more society changes, because we're now vibrating at a different drum beat, and therefore we are creating a different world. It's you know, if we believe that something is right, then we need to keep going with it and not being pulled off that path by trying to convince people, by trying to defend ourselves from people who attack us because we're different. Just keep putting one foot in front of the other, doing what you believe to be right, and the system won't get you. The system only gets you when you allow it to vibrate you into line because it suits you in the moment.
I notice when I'm on a path, and I've always been very strongly pulled to honor what is in my soul. And when I'm doing something that is discordant with the, you know, my true self, something happens to me body. And I also become very, very ill. And I've also become ill when I would try or was forced to participate in something that isn't real, that isn't truth, that isn't centered in love. And so I would actually have to give thanks for these, for the illnesses or for the body breaking down, because it was my soul saying, no, 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 you're not supposed to, as you so appropriately put it, be a sheeple, just following along with what everybody is expected to be or do. And consequently, I've dealt with severe ridicule myself because I've had to listen to the dictates of my soul, which can be very traumatic, which can be very chaotic, just like you were pointing out. Even recently, I was sharing with somebody, these things didn't work out because it wasn't meant to be. It's not because I was doing something wrong. It's just because it wasn't meant to be. And I need to be somewhere else doing something according to the higher calling that I have been sent back here to fulfill. So it is a real challenge. And at the same time, I'm inspired by all of this because even as people are being manipulated and controlled, and there is all of this fear everywhere in this world bombarding people right now, then there's people like yourself and like me who've been sent back or who've had these experiences and having the courage to share with people, wait a second. I know what love is. I know what it feels like. I know what that peace is that surpasses all understanding. And it's very important to allow yourself to flow and to think for yourself and not allow anyone under any circumstances to think for you.
Yeah, it's important to point out the whole thing is about perspective. And the point, your point of observation, and what the manipulation wants us to do is have our point of observation in this reality and only in this reality. And if we do that, then we are going to operate on a very limited level of who we are. The trick is, and it's a challenge for sure, is to live in this reality, to be in this world, but not to be of it from that point of observation. Because that, people say, well, you know, when's the cavalry arriving? When are the good guys going to come and save us? Well, hold on a second. We don't need saving because we're infinite consciousness. There's nothing to save. It's just a point of observation that we think we need saving. But the point being that it's not just about, guys on white horses coming over the horizon. It's about us raising ourselves to connect with that level of higher consciousness, so that we can express that level of understanding, love, knowledge, and wisdom in this reality. And it's to understand this too, I think. Symbolically, if we come from the five sense level of reality and that limitation, sense of limitation, then if we're going down a river on a canoe, then we can see as far as the next turn of the river. Our higher consciousness, that which we are shutting out through these dense belief systems and emotions, that can see from source to sea. It can see the entire river. So what to us seems to be something negative or bad or upsetting or frustrating can, from the higher perspective, be a wonderful gift. I mean, I've said many times, life presents our greatest gifts, brilliantly disguised often, as our worst nightmare. To us, in the experiencing of it, it's our worst nightmare because we can only see the next turn on the river. But from the perspective of that which is offering the gift, in other words, our higher consciousness, it is the last thing is our worst nightmare. It is actually a wonderful gift which is going to lead to our freedom of multidimensional self. Using the same analogy, you can be going down the river on a canoe, and you know there's a few hours of light left, and you really want to get as far down the river as you can. And then something happens to force you across to the bank. Maybe that you get a hole in your canoe or something. Now, to you, that is a terrible thing. And we get frustrated, and we get angry, and we say, why did this happen to me? Oh, God, there's so many hours of light left, and I'm stuck here. And then someone comes over to you and says, what were you doing? It's like, oh, I'm so fed up. I just wanted to carry on down the river. You see, you know, just round the next bend. Yeah, what about it? There's a massive waterfall. Do you not know that? and no, I didn't know that. No, and suddenly you realize, oh, wow, I'm glad it happened now. And when you judge or perceive from this higher level that which can see from source to see, then what appears to the five sense level to be negative things like a breakup of a relationship, like losing a job, like not getting the job you want, like your football team losing and stuff like that, it actually takes on a very different perspective. It's living in this world while perceiving it from that perspective that makes a lot more sense of it and makes it a lot easier to live in, because we get caught in these fears and these frustrations and these this anger at that things are not happening in the way we want them to. But, you know, it's like pushing against a locked door. You know, if that's not the way you need to flow, that door's not going to open. The moment you find a door where you do need to flow, it's going to fly open.
Yes, and
it may not be what you consciously decide you want, but it's what you've, at a higher level, decided you want to do, which is when you leave the body, it's the question of, did I achieve what I wanted to achieve? Did I do what I wanted to do before I went in there? Rather than, did I want to do and did I achieve what I decided I wanted to do once I was in there? Because the two perspectives are completely different. You know, I mean, this is a phrase about money, you can't take it with you. And it's true. What means so much to us here is completely irrelevant the second we leave the body.
Can I ask a question relative to that? You mentioned a river, and I think a lot of people, especially people who are not aware, they're not awake, they feel like life is a river, and they're kind of in a boat floating downstream, and there's not much they can do about it. And the religious prophets really have done nothing to dissuade them from that. They paint this eschatological picture that we are headed for Armageddon and there's nothing anyone can do about it. Your lives are insignificant, blah, blah, blah. But I'm very, very in tune with what you're saying about this free will, this awake freedom of choice that we have. We can do and we can be what we want to be, even as a people. Do you believe that we do not have to march down that pathway painted for us by the prophets, but that we can actually choose a different future for the human race by intention.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
You've raised a very important point there, because it's part of a lot of research has come along in the last few months, and in part to do with this, and I've got to talk about it in this next book I'm just finishing. You can, because reality is belief-led, you can create a mass reality by creating a mass belief. And when they're selling us this idea of Armageddon and the end of the world, if enough people lock into it, then they are going to start manifesting versions of that. Of course they are, because they believe in it. Just as if you believe you're powerless, you live a powerless life. And not because you are, but because you think you are. So we can create mass collective realities if we can be persuaded that this is the way it's going. I couldn't agree with you more. And one of the things that happened when I first had my extraordinary experiences in the early 1990s, late 1980s, which woke me up and blew the top of my head off, one of the things that I came across, at that time I kept bumping into psychic people. I mean, it was so ridiculous. I thought the whole world must be psychic, you know. I mean, well, which we are, but of course some have developed it. But and one of the common themes that they were saying to me, I'm getting someone is saying, I have to tell you this, and it was so common. It was that there was going to be a spiritual awakening, because there was an energetic change taking place that, in effect, was going to act like a spiritual alarm clock, and it was going to start breaking down, as I would articulate it today, was going to start breaking down these concrete eggshells that we put around ourselves. And in fact, I wrote a book at that time, back in 1990, which is actually called Truth Vibrations, and which was a term I gave to this vibrational change that I kept hearing about. Now, as I've gone through the 1990s, when I started talking about this stuff, my goodness me, no one wanted to know. Are you kidding? Very, very few wanted to know. And I went in Britain, I went through absolutely mass ridicule, which was good for me, because it let me let go of the fear of what other people thought, which was a really purifying cleansing experience. So that was a nightmare in the experiencing of it, which again, greatest gift, brilliantly disguised, worst nightmare. And as I've passed through these years, and I'm sure you've come across it yourself as well, I have seen tangible and gathering confirmation that this awakening is happening. It's not happening on NBC News or the BBC, because, I mean, they're the last people to know anything that's happening of relevance. But it's happening. I'm meeting more and more people who would have dismissed and laughed at so much of the stuff who are now absolutely looking at it and saying, hey, this is starting to make sense. Because the more the density, the five sense programming breaks down, which rejects that which is different from the programming. So the weaker the program has in its power over our perception, the more our minds will open to that which is beyond the program. So as this process is taking place, people's minds are opening more and more to see these apparently far-out explanations. They're not really. They're perfectly logical. To be valid. And it's definitely happening. And, you know, people talk about this year 2012 coming up and all this stuff. I don't think 2012 is as relevant as it's made out. I think there is a process of awakening, a process of vibrational change, which is gathering and gathering, and it will have gathered greatly by 2012 and will continue to gather. And I'm very positive. I see this Orwellian state that's being introduced now as the last desperate throw of a force that's losing its control over our sense of reality.
Something
what kind
really
of
special
action?
That I wanted to share is that when I was told that I had to return to this alien world because it's not home, it's not real, there were a few things that was told to me. First of all, I was told, I reminded that where you are going, Juliet, it is just an illusion. It is not real. You are to travel through it, but not identify with it. Or
that's the key. That's the key. Way. Not identifying with it.
Yes, and it was so powerful. And also, when I started to come back into the physical plane, I saw that it was nothing but waves. It wasn't solid. I could see that it wasn't solid. I could see that it wasn't real. And it was very drab by comparison to what I was experiencing outside of this realm. And that I have held fast to, regardless of what I go through on the five sensory plane now, because that gives me, you know, I hold on to that peace. I hold on to that love. I hold on to the truth that this plane, it's a hologram.
Exactly. What you just said is very, very interesting, that when you were looking into this world, you saw it as waves.
Mm.
Well, you know, if anything confirms how detached we are in this realm from the reality we're experiencing, it is the fact that we look through our eyes and we think we're seeing a three-dimensional world around us, outside of us. That world only exists within us, in our brain. And in fact, when in our brain is the physical level of it. In our minds is the real level that we're doing it. And it's a decoding process. And we are like, at the computer level, it's like a television set, obviously, seriously more sophisticated, but it's like a television set. A television set is taking waves broadcast from the atmosphere. I mean, I'm looking through my window now. I don't see episodes of Friends and the 10 o'clock news coming through the trees. It's in the atmosphere. It's in a frequency form. And the television decodes those frequencies into pictures. What we do is we decode those frequencies into holographic images, which, like all holograms, can the best of them can appear to be as solid as the wall I'm looking at, which is a hologram, but actually is not a hologram, is not a solid at all. This is where, once you start to realize this, all these apparent mysteries and inconsistencies and contradictions within quantum physics, i.e., the solid wall is made of atoms and atoms are empty in terms of energy in this reality, starts to make sense. How can an atom that's not solid make up a solid wall? It can't. And the reason that the two are not contradictory is because it's a decoding process. Energy that's vibrating slowly, we decode as more dense. Energy that's vibrating quickly, we decode as less dense. And in all the forms in between. So even down to the very basics of what we appear to be looking at and experiencing, it's a complete illusion. And if you look at the Matrix movie, particularly the first one of the trilogy, they were looking at screens that were just numbers and codes. But what they were seeing was street scenes and people and cars and all the rest of it and buildings. And that's what we're doing. See, the only place that television exists as pictures and programs is on the screen. Everywhere else, it's not like that at all. It's computer, it's frequency fields. The internet, the only place the internet exists as we perceive the internet, websites and graphics and words, is actually on the computer screen. Everywhere else, it's electronic circuits and other technological wizardry. And the only place that this reality exists as we perceive it, solid walls, buildings, and all the rest of it, is in our minds. Because the waveforms that you were talking about, that you saw, we're decoding those into holographic reality. There's one wonderful story that I tell in the last book about
a guy called Michael Tolbert, who wrote a brilliant book in the 90s called The Holographic Universe. And he told a story in that book, which I told in mine, the last one, of because you can use so many analogies, simple analogies, to get across what we're talking about here. We are in an amnesic state. The human race is suffering from amnesia. It has forgotten who it is and what it really is. And it's the same principle as a stage hypnotist. The hypnotist is putting into the mind of the stooge on the stage a belief in what is real. Therefore, he is putting in the belief that you are eating a apple, even though what you're really eating is a potato. And what the five senses do is they just turn frequency fields into electrical signals, which are passed to the brain, which the brain decodes. If you can, log in or hack in to that decoding process, then the brain will decode the electrical signal of potato into that of an apple, and you'll taste an apple because we taste in our head, we see in our head, we everything happens in our head, in the mind, and so what we believe is the equivalent of a hypnotic suggestion, and therefore we are decoding infinite possibility into the belief, which we might call self-fulfilling prophecy, into the belief that we have. That's what we see. This is why when you put two people together who have a really preconceived idea about each other, belief, and they talk to each other, they don't hear what the other one's saying, because they are not hearing what is said and how it is said. They're hearing what their belief decodes to be what the person said and how they said it, which fits the belief they have about that person. I mean, I've seen television programs about this. It's fascinating to see people actually not hearing what someone said because it doesn't fit the belief that they have about them. So anyway, this story, to bring this all together, Michael Tolbert told in the book, his father had this party, and he had a stage hypnotist come along, and he was doing all the party tricks. And then he had this guy called Tom who was sitting in a chair, and he said to him, when I bring you back to a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter in the room. And what he then did was brought his daughter, and he put her right in front of him. So he's looking into her stomach, and he brings him apparently out of the trance state, and he says, Tom, can you see your daughter? And he's looking around, and he can't see her. And she starts giggling, but he can't hear her. The hypnotist goes behind the daughter and puts his hand in the small of her back. And he says, Tom, I'm holding something. What am I holding? Well, he looked incredulous because it was obvious. He's holding a watch. He says, an inscription on the watch. Can you read it? And he peered forward and he read the inscription. His daughter standing between him and the watch. And now, if you talk to an eminent professor of science anywhere in the world who was not open-minded, he would say that was ridiculous and impossible. But it's not, because that man's daughter, in the form that we perceive us to be, i.e. a physical body and clothes and everything, only exists in his decoding process. What she really is a vibrational field. And so what happens is, when the implanted belief is put in, your daughter's not in the room, the decoding process that turns vibrational fields into holographic images does not read her energy field. So it reads everyone else's in the room so he can see them and he can see the walls and the chairs, but he can't see her because he's not reading that field, because it's the equivalent of a firewall on a computer system. It will not read that which is blocked off. And so that is just a very kind of potent example of the power of belief to edit our reality, which is why I say we need to stop believing, open to all possibility, as I think the Greek philosopher Socrates was quoted as saying, wisdom is knowing how little we know, so open our minds to all possibility, and then all possibility can get in And then we can start looking at a much greater range of possibility than the limitation of belief, which turns into limitation of experience and limitation of achievement.
This is such a very good point that you make, because when I have shared with some people about my experiences on the other side, and even recently I was talking to a Christian man, and he was sharing with me what he's read in a book and what he's been taught. I was talking to him about experiences that I had, and yet he still wanted to argue with me and insist upon his belief system. And I said, but I've had an experience that tells me something different. And I think that it's really a shame how people, as you point out, are so locked up in their belief systems and also in being in control, that they lose or are not interested in allowing themselves to open up and perceive and experience something else.
Well, what you just said is very interesting, because what the religious guy you were talking about, he was defending a belief system out of fear. I mean,
yeah.
there's so much belief system defense that comes from fear. In fact, most of it does. And one of the things is fear about... I find that people who've lived a long time and suddenly find out that what they believed all their life, say they were in the military or something, and then suddenly they find out that actually all those kind of wars and conflicts they were involved in, they weren't fighting for what you were told they were fighting for. They were fighting for something very different, and then the forces behind it were very different than the ones you thought were behind it. They don't want to go there, because they'd rather shoot the messenger, if you like, or
yeah.
dismiss it, because it says something about them and their lives if they have to say to themselves, oh my goodness me, I've been duped all my life. And they don't want to do that, and so they reject the message on the basis of that. And again, once you go to the higher level of perspective, then it doesn't matter you've been duped all your life. First of all, the people doing the duping are serious dupers. I mean, you know, these people that I'm exposing, they're not, you know, we look at the George Bushes of this world, but, you know, they're not at that level of intelligence. I mean, they seriously understand how to manipulate reality. And they're not the ones you see in on the television on CNN. They're the people that control the people you see on CNN. And so we should be kind to ourselves that we've actually not, you know, got everything right in our understanding of what's going on, because it's been brilliantly done. And the other thing is that actually you've not been duped all your life, because this is just one experience within infinite possibility and eternity.
Yeah.
So, you know, you've actually been duped for a tiny, tiny fraction of well, not even time, because that doesn't exist either. You know, once you get to this higher perspective of what's, who we are and the nature of reality, then it doesn't matter that you've been duped all your life. It doesn't matter. It's not that you have one go at this and, oh my goodness, I've had one go at this and I've been duped for 30 years. No. It's just an experience, you know. And be kind to yourself. Forget it. And just celebrate the fact that, whoa, I get it now. Great. That's a great experience then, isn't it? You know, don't concentrate on the fact you've been duped. Look at the fact that you're not duped now. You know?
Yeah, that's so important, David, for people to hear that. And it is really important for us to be kind to ourselves and to have an attitude of gratitude, because when we can be awakened to this truth, how liberating it is. You know, this awakening is very powerful, and I'm so pleased that it's happening more and more. You know, getting back to this other man, because I was spending a lot of time in Nashville, Tennessee, for example, and these dear souls, and there's lots of lovely, lovely people there, I've got to say, but so many of them, they're talking about this devil, this monster, and, you know, I never saw any devil. I never saw any he-god sitting on a throne judging us and saying, oh, you blew it, down you go. That doesn't happen at all. And yet these people they're shaking. They're so afraid. And then they want to say, oh, well, the devil clothes people and disguises itself as light and all of that kind of stuff. And yet they won't allow themselves to just be in the love and experience the truth that the love is conveying right there.
Yeah, the computer programs, which we inherit and then add to from our own experience, are very, very powerful. And if people are operating at that level, then they'll dismiss anything which at all challenges the program. And when you think about it, if we're operating on the computer level of reality rather than the consciousness level of reality, then not only do we inherit the hard drive, which has those traits in it, we're also downloading reality from our parents and from our peers all the way through the formative years, through childhood and what have you. And if you are in one of these really extreme, rigid religious areas or in families like that or go to schools like that, then you're downloading this stuff all the time, minute by minute. And it's a real, literally, deprogramming process before you can start to see other possibilities. This is why repetition is such a great form of mind programming and mind control. It's repetition. I mean, if you just keep repeating, it was Osama bin Laden, it was Osama bin Laden, over and over again, no matter, you know, for a long time, no matter where you turn the television on, you're being told the same thing. The computer level of reality is downloading that, and it's becoming the computer level's reality. And sense of perception. And it's only when you come from the conscious level of reality that you can filter that and see through it. If you're operating on the computer level, the five sense level, then you can't see through it because it is what you, it is you. Because your computer's downloaded it. It's taken it as its reality. And this is again, the reason why so many people say to me, after they've started to awaken, as like anybody can, why didn't I get it before? Because you weren't operating on that level of consciousness that you are now. We can see through it. You were in this world and you were of it because you were operating at the five-sense level of reality. Now you're not. You're in this world, but you're not of it. So you're observing from a source-to-see level, and you can see that these official versions of these things like 9/11 are nonsense. But if you only operate on the computer level, then you can't see that because you are that belief.
That's such a good point. And one thing that I will say is that when 9/11 happened, and I haven't got a telly, I've never had a telly, my daughter was in Manhattan when it was taking place, and my friend rang me up, and he said, this is what's going on. Straight away, I said, this is an inside job. They've done this to give themselves an excuse to put everybody under complete and constant surveillance. Then, about 3 months later, somebody handed me your book, I Am Me and I Am Free. And I just said, oh, thank goodness, because I felt kind of isolated in my knowing of this stuff. When I started reading your books, and I've got to say, I am eternally grateful for this. Everything that I've seen and been through suddenly made sense to me.
This is a very good point. This is why it is so important that people do not bow to fear of what other people think and just speak their truth. Because when people do that, other people can see, oh, it's not only me.
Yeah.
It's making people frightened to express their own truth, their own uniqueness, their own unique view or whatever, that is a vital part of this process of selling a fake reality. Because those who have a different reality, they don't speak out about it because the majority have accepted the fake reality, and of course the norm rules, and if you speak against the norm, then you get ridiculed or condemned. But if you will not concede to that, if you will not be the violin that the other violins start to, you know, make you vibrate to, then other people see, can hear you because you're refusing to shut up, and they say, oh my goodness, it's not only me. And it's one of the great things that I get when people said, I read your book and I realized I wasn't crazy. This is why it's so important, like I say, that we just speak our truth. Because, okay, someone says you're mad, and someone says you're the devil, and, I mean, you know, you got me interested here. Why should I be bothered what you think of me? Because you know something, mate? When you leave that body, you're going to think you're a right pillock, and you're going to remember this conversation, and you're going to go, I didn't say that, did I? And so it doesn't matter what people say to you. It doesn't matter what people do, because we just have to speak our truth. And, we have a right to do that. And if, I'll lose my friends. Are they your friends if they don't respect your right to express your uniqueness and express your uniqueness of you and respect that you have a right to do that? Well, so what, you know? And so it's so important that we don't fall for this. And I was fortunate, and I say fortunate, and wouldn't think of it at the time, but I went through this mass ridicule in the early 90s in Britain because it allowed me to let go of that fear of what other people thought, because it seemed that everyone was laughing anyway. Not everyone was, but the vast majority were. It's only when you let it go and you start to speak whatever comes into your mind, instead of going through that mental gymnastics, what do I leave out and how do I say this so that these people will think I'm all right? It's only then that you realize what a box you lived in before. Because if we only conform to the conventional norms, we are not living our truth and our lives and our uniqueness. We're living other people's version of what we should be. In other words, we're just a puppet of someone else's version of reality. And if we're going to break that cycle and break out of this fake reality, then we have to start standing up, speaking out, not aggressively and all the rest of it, but just saying what our truth is. And then other people can hear a different version of reality, and enormous numbers of people are going, hey, that makes more sense than the last one. And we're now starting a wave of change that is going to bring this nonsense to an end.
Yeah, I'm so pleased about that. And you have set such a wonderful example, David, with this and being undaunted. And it's, given me a lot of strength to carry on with sharing my truth, because I was very timid for a long time, even about sharing the fact that I'm a multi-NDE-er. I didn't really have my coming out until just a few years ago, really around the beginning of this decade.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with the way things have been set up, you're a female and you're half blind and you're this and you're that. You know, there was even a book. I don't know if it was in the 60s or 70s, called Women and Madness, you know, so easily equating women, females, to being mad.
The thing is that if we don't set out to convince anybody, I'm not trying to convince anybody, then, one of the things is, people get caught in trying to convince other people that what they're saying is true. Well, the world is full of people trying to convince people of that, and a lot of them are called politicians, it's about putting into the public domain as much as you can another view of reality or possibility, and then let people make their minds up, because what people think of me and what I say is literally none of my business. It really isn't. It's the business of how people receive it, and once you put it out, then that's it. I mean, I walk away, and then it's for other people to make of it what they will. And it's this fear of what other people think and trying to convince other people. It's where we get caught. It's a simple process. This is another view of reality. What do you think? Oh, really? You don't agree with it? Oh, that's all right. Then. You do agree with it? Oh, that's nice. Whatever. We just be relaxed about it. And how people receive it is up to them. And if we detach ourselves from how it's received, then we don't get caught in the stress and emotion of what other people are saying about us and what we do.
And it's really about being our authentic selves and coming from a place of love. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, and I would say to this, when we're making decisions, when you've left the body and you're looking from that perspective, which decision would you have made? Because it's probably going to be different to the one you're thinking to make it.
Yes.
And if we, like I say, if we can live in this world while not being of it, then this world must start then to express the realm that people, when they have near-death experiences, never want to come back from.
That's the truth. I can tell you from experience, that is the truth. Well, it looks like, David, that we've come to the end of this wonderful transmission.
That's been fascinating. It's been really nice.
It's been so wonderful having you with us, and thank you so much for everything that you have shared. And again, I'm going to iterate the name of your book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth. Everything else is illusion. True story. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you that it is only with the heart that one sees rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails. Thank you for being with us. We will talk to you next week. And thank you, David.
Thank you, Juliet.
God bless.
Bye.